I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal!
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are recording this on the afternoon of Monday, June 11th. Rabbi Mark Goodman, are you okay, man?
Yeah, I think I'm better than most fans. How about you?
I'm alive, I guess. I'm basking in the duality of the Rapids and the state of the team and the records that they obviously set since last week podcasted, and the reality that I semi went viral on Saturday night, and I'm kind of proud of myself. Like, I've never had a tweet that was retweeted by all this group, by multiple of this group all in the same tweet. Andy Edwards, Andrew Wiebe from MLSsoccer.com, Hercules Gomez, Bob Williams, got favorited by Jeff Carlisle and also retweeted by our mutual friend Harrison Crow. And unfortunately, that was the start of a Twitter thread in which I lambasted all of the statistical ways in which the 2018 Colorado Rapids are on par to be one of the worst iterations of the club.
And you were just 4 days behind me because I did that. I had that meltdown after Open Cup, which was like I went through and looked at the Rapids' worst seasons in history, because a lot of old school Rapids fans can lay down like what's the worst season in history and have opinions about it. And I had a really interesting conversation offline with a guy named Tim, who is on Twitter, and we actually met in person. And he basically said, I said that like 96 and 01 were the worst years, because statistically they were. And he was like, yeah, but in 96 it was our first year, so everyone was just happy to have soccer. And in 01 it was kind of like, well, yeah, we had a bad year. But it didn't feel systemic, and didn't feel like the team wasn't spending money, and it didn't feel like, you know, so he was basically like, you know, 2015 and 2017 were way worse. Even if statistically they weren't way worse, which is fascinating. So Matt, you kind of went in on it and basically were kind of, you were comparing, instead of Rapids' worst seasons, will this season be the worst Rapids season? You were basically like, will this be the worst season? How does this season compare with all the other worst MLS teams in history?
All the other worst MLS teams in history? Well, first of all, as we talked right before we hit record, the Rapids right now, the worst season ever, folks, in MLS history in terms of points per game in the 34-game era. It's kind of hard to judge things because, you know, it was only in 2001 that MLS took away the crazy shootout system and then allowed for ties to exist, so it's kind of hard to compare that era, and then it's also kind of hard to compare when teams are only playing 26 games opposed to 34 games. You know, you go 3 or 4 unbeaten, and that can be the difference between, you know, overcoming that from one season to another. But so, all time in terms of that worst points per game was DC United. I believe they had 16 points mark in a 34-game season. That was the 2013 DC United team. They had a bunch of injuries. Ben Olsen didn't do a good job. He said that he didn't do a good job. But that team basically knew by this time of 2013, you know, middle of June, that they weren't making the playoffs, and anything short of a miraculous spending summer window wasn't going to save them. So they essentially put all of their eggs into the basket of their final four U.S. Open Cup games, Mark, and they got out there with a 1-0 win in the final at Real Salt Lake at the Rio T to essentially make something of that season and then put themselves in CCL. They've been a little bit more middling, but they made the playoffs since. That's the worst non-season. Right now, Mark, the Rapids are on pace to have their worst points per game ever, regardless of wins or regardless of whether whether MLS had ties or not, and they're on pace to have their worst points per game regardless of the number of games that they've played.
There are two teams that, like, regardless of whether they were statistically and points per game the worst teams in history, what happened to them afterwards, and their lack of fan appeal and or their stadium situation, makes them kind of automatically the two most catastrophic franchises and most catastrophic years in MLS history. So the 2001 Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Yes.
Who had an awful season. I'm trying to look it up because I tweeted the number and I don't remember what their record was. But it was really bad. I think it was the... It was not as bad. I think DC United had 0.47 points per game in 2013. I think Tampa Bay had like 0.52. So they were bad. But like, more importantly, they were contracted right after the season. Like, they had really bad attendance. By the way, really bad attendance, according to what I read, was below an average below 11,000, which
yeah.
is bad. But like, you know, it's not like unfathomable that a 2018 MLS team could be around that number. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. So like, being terrible, being financially, not having an owner at all, they were owned by MLS at that year, and then being contracted when the season ends, that's catastrophic. Like, that's as bad as it gets, right? Like, so as bad as Rapids fans want to make whatever's going on right now and in 2017 and 2015 and 2014, I don't think, fingers crossed, kanina hora poo poo poo, that's Yiddish, the Rapids will be contracted at the end of this season. So, silver linings. And then the other team that's in the same boat is Chivas USA, right? Like, Chivas had limited to no fan appeal, a borderline racist owner at the time who, towards the end or right after the team was folded, it came out that, like, they wouldn't hire non-Latino staff because they didn't want English-speaking white people in the office. And that's documented. I'm not pontificating off the top of my head, guys. The team was awful. The players, when they left, were all relieved to be gone. And it was an ill-conceived idea from the start. And they actually weren't... They had their last couple years, I think, were all bad. I think their last year was 2013. Mm-hmm. They were below 1.0 points per game, but they were never, like, you know, below 0.7. So anyways, so as bad as you could say 2013 DC United is as bad as it gets, but I would argue that even if you don't win anything, and then Matt, you had a point about 2013 DC United.
That DC United in 2013 won the US Open
Cup. That's right.
I believe with their final three games in said Open Cup being all on the road. I don't quote me on that. I might have that mixed up, but the final was against RSL, who was a playoff team that year.
Here.
And RSL was at home, and DC United got out there with a 1-0 win to win the trophy.
And here's another factoid that I know you know the answer to. Matt, who was the coach of DC United in 2013?
Who was the coach of DC United in 2013? Was it Ben Olsen?
That's correct. Isn't that amazing? And they were bad last year, too. And I talked to DC United fans and said, like, are they going to fire Ben Olsen? They're like, no, he's gonna get to open Audi Field. Like, the takeaway is they're sticking with Olsen through Audi Field to see if he can kind of right the ship. But also they've basically assumed that, like, nobody wanted to go see the crappy DC United teams that weren't properly funded at, you know, raccoon-infested RFK Stadium. And so Ben Olsen's been hamstrung for years. And he still could win a trophy. And I think that actually winning a trophy in 2013 was pretty impressive. Anthony Hudson doesn't have that to show for, at least right now. So he won't be winning U.S. Open Cup or probably Supporters Shield.
Technically the Wooden Spoon is in existence right now.
We could
do
that.
It is at the Corner of the Galaxy Studios.
Right.
We could be, as a podcast, the keeper of the Wooden Spoon.
I don't think
on
we're going to get
it. Centennial
38. I don't think they're going to give it to us. I think they're going to... But anyways, point being, you know, I think the Rapids have a better chance of winning the Canadian Championship than winning Supporters Shield at this point. But you never know. You never know. All right, we've done the weirdest thing we've ever done for banter. We started talking. We were incapable of avoiding, like, talking about, you know, the meltdown that is the 2018 Colorado Rapids. So that's, but we kind of went on a random, like, rantification. I was going to talk about the World Cup again, but, you know, who wants that anymore?
Yeah, and I feel there's an Arsenal podcast that one of my expat fans friends listens to, and it's three stand-up comedians who all live in London, were born and raised in London, are all Gooners, Mark, and he says that normally their best podcasts are when Arsenal just had a terrible run, like losing like 3-0 to Chelsea on the road, or getting knocked out of Champions League, or having a transfer transfer window closed and they don't spend any money. Yeah. Like, that's when their podcasts are the best. So I don't think we can really have a script for today.
I wish.
But it's going to be hilarious.
We've lost 8-9. We've lost 8 league and 9 total games, and that basically, like,
both club records.
We don't have stuff to talk about that we didn't talk about last week and the week before and the week before on some level, right? And Matt wrote a really great piece for
Last Word on Soccer.
Phenomenal piece, taking apart everything that went into the Aigner signing and all the problems or the challenges that came with that, the TAM money that was acquired for it, and then all the problems that went with Aigner. Just a great deep dive. Well done. Abby Moon did a great piece for Burgundy Wave today, and I don't write my article for Backpass for Around MLS until, like, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I'm already worried. Like, I don't really have much to say. Like, I basically have assumed that I'm going to be doing pastoral counseling as a rabbi for Rapids Nation, or to talk about the deep theology of why bad things happen to good people, because I've run out of tactical things to say about the Rapids, but... That should lead us in nicely to reviewing these last two games.
Okay, Mark, since last we spoke, the Rapids had two games. They played on the road last Wednesday at Nashville SC on the campus of Vanderbilt University. That score was 2-0 in favor of not the Rapids. And an own goal in the first half from Michael Azira. Last time that we had a podcast where Azira started, I think the NYCFC game, I said my one good thing was Azira started and wasn't bad. And I was about to write that down, and then I immediately had to scratch it out. I don't remember who scored to Nashville in the second half, but it was a relatively limp final 30 minutes from...
I think it was Lebo Malota.
Sure!
Former Pittsburgh Riverhound Lebo Malota.
Moving on, the Rapids then fly to...
I was bummed that Kosuke Kimura didn't start, though. They put him in at the very end, at like the 85th, but like which gave you... 3 former Rapids on the field at the same time. But anyways, yeah.
In any case, the Rapids move on to BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston, where they played this past Saturday in MLS League play, where they were defeated to the Houston Dynamo by a score of 2-0. I can't remember who scored which goal. Was it Minotas on the PK?
He scored them both.
Yeah, he scored them both?
Yeah.
I thought it was... What, really?
Yeah, who did you think scored the other one?
I can't
remember. Oh, Tomas Martinez.
Scored the first one.
You're right, sorry.
Rapids come out in...
You're right, he says after he explains who scored the first
yes.
one.
Yes, yeah. Rapids come out in a 3-4-3 that I think for both of us, Mark, quickly devolved to a 5-4-1 with 11 people behind the ball. Johan Blomberg gets the ball after Houston is overlapping and throwing numbers into the box. He immediately gives it away. Tomas Martinez steals it from him, dribbles to the defense, shoots. Tim Howard makes a decent first save. Rebound goes up, and Tomas Martinez finishes it. I think later in that same first half, Johan Blomberg caught out of position with Declan Wynn also out of position. That leads to a PK by Johan Blomberg.
Right, but right before that, who made the bad pass that started that whole series?
Was it Declan Wynn?
No, that would be really awful. No.
Was it Jack Price?
Danny Wilson started with a really bad diagonal pass that got picked off by DeMarcus Beasley. Then Declan Wynn gets posterized, standing still like a tree, and then Johan Blomberg runs in behind and kicks his man in the leg, and that results in a PK. So there were the two plays that resulted in the Rapids conceding goals were both identical in the sense that we were deeply bunkered in a 5-4-1, which meant that there were 9 guys behind the ball, and as we tried to play out...
There's nobody to pass to!
I'll say it differently, which is we tried to play it out of the back and we blew it, turned over the ball in a terrible spot and conceded a goal twice, essentially. The second one, obviously, was we turned over the ball on a terrible pass in a terrible place, kicked a guy, and conceded a PK. But the inability for the Rapids to play out of the back is a notable problem because the alternative they had in the Houston game, which we all saw in the first half, was for the first 30 minutes of the game, they were bunkered in a 5 back line, 4 line in front of them, what we call a low block, which is like they're playing very, very deep, right? They're basically giving up the first 2/3 of the field to their opposition.
It's the battle of Helm's Deep on a soccer pitch.
I love that little tweet you sent, yes. I'm not as good at Lord of the Rings. If you had made a Star Wars reference, you know, if it was the Battle of Hoth and they'd fallen all the way back, then
no, but they had an escape plan with the cannon to neutralize the Star Destroyer.
The Rapids had an escape plan, and that leads me to what I was going to say. The Rapids had an escape plan, which is we're going to kick it really, really long to Yannick Bolli. Yannick Bolli's going to stand his man up and beat three guys and then run to goal. And it wasn't, like, the worst plan in the world in the sense that, like, he just needed luck, a little bit of magic, or really just to be by himself, and the Rapids would get out of the first half 0-0. I wasn't opposed to going in and bunkering and countering. I kind of liked the idea. The thing is, you have to defend, right? If you're going to say, we're going to defend for our lives for 75 minutes and try to nick a goal at the end, then you
play
have to
safe,
then
no
you have
mistakes.
To then you have to defend, right? And we've said this on this podcast many, many times, but, like, we're not a good defensive team right now, and our three center backs are not reliable defensively, and it's really problematic because we can't create in the midfield, we don't have dependable center backs, and our strikers aren't, like, takeover guys. Like, basically what we used to have was, you know, ridiculous speed down the flanks, and, you know, Marlon Hairston hasn't quite been the get-in-behind, over-the-top dangerous guy anymore, and he's not whipping in crosses.
Albeit coming off of his injury.
I know, but I think one thing that Hudson said for weeks was, when we get some guys back from injury, we'll be okay. And it's like, well, Marlon's played two games back from injury, and he looks like a guy who's rusty because he's been injured.
And I'd say the same thing of Blomberg.
By the time all these guys get back into the groove after, you know, playing 90 minutes regularly, we'll have, like, the season will be over, right? Like, it's like, I don't know who you get back from injury and then just turns it on and
this
suddenly
solves all of
anyways,
this team's problems.
I'm all over the place about this because I kind of wanted to talk about both games, but
okay, Mark. So Mario Minokas converts the PK.
Yeah, yeah.
Houston Dynamo are up 2-0. Yannick Bolli, in his frustration, puts kind of a a punch, but with your forearm,
yeah,
like
karate,
not quite
karate chop him in the nose.
Yeah, so you know a subdued version of what Hawk did in Cobra Kai, essentially. You
okay.
Don't watch Cobra Kai, but okay. so in any case, that gives him a straight red card because, as we found out from Zlatan Ibrahimovic about a month ago,
hands to the face
is a straight red. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Elbow to the face also. It doesn't matter if it's unintentional. Your job as a soccer player is to make sure you don't hit a guy above the neck, period. And everybody knows that. And I think, you know, one of the things I love about the only good thing about this last Rapids game was, I don't know, I'm sure you watched it the same way that I did, but, like, our commenters, you know, Marcelo Balboa and Richard Fleming were like, yeah, you can't do that. That's a red card. Like, not too many other teams in MLS will their home commentators say that's a red card. They'll usually say, like, oh, that should be a yellow. You know, like Brian Dunseth for RSL is, like, often the worst at this. He's actually been better lately, but anyways.
Lest you poke the beast that is Atlanta United Twitter right now. But so, in any case, Rapids are halftime.
Galaxy commenters, too. Kobe,
I am not getting into Kobe Jones and Joseph.
I'm going to do it. Kobe Jones never met a foul on the Galaxy that was actually a foul. Oh no, that's just playing rough. That's
you want a fun stat here,
good
Mark?
Soccer. What?
2015, Kobe Jones was part of the guest commentators who would do pick'ems when MLSsoccer.com was still doing pick'ems. In the 34 games that he picked the LA Galaxy, guess how many times he picked the LA Galaxy to lose?
Zero. Shocking.
Every single road game, with the exception of, like, Chivas USA and San Jose,
he must be having a rough year this year, then.
In any case, Rapids are down a man, Rapids are down two goals. I thought the first half was relatively boring, just because Houston said, we're going to have the ball, we're going to go forward and kind of try, but we're not going to put a big deal about it.
So tactically, you know, and this is, I really like talking tactics even when we are terrible, right? Tactically, I didn't mind the way they went into Houston, because the book on Houston is this. Houston is a counterattack team. They don't want to possess the ball. They want to get the ball and on a counterattack, swing the ball out to Kyoto or Manotas, or play it from Martinez down the middle, and just quick, rapid, go down the side, and then get in behind, right?
Yeah.
That's when they're most dangerous. When Albert Elias is behind your fullback, you're in big trouble. So how do you avoid that? You bunker. right? You basically say, you can have the ball, you will never get to counterattack, you're going to have to go through all of the guys on our team in order to score. Guess what? Houston said, okay, we'll go through all your guys.
Yeah,
and
so
they had no problem with it.
So it was a nice idea, it was poorly executed, and then at that point...
Super poorly executed.
At that point, Houston had so much wiggle room that they didn't really do a whole lot. I think they hit a couple posts in the second half. Tim Howard made a couple really good saves. The Rapids did get a couple set-piece chances that Jack Price put right on the goal and made easy for Joe Willis to...
Well,
I don't even know they were quarter
saves. It was too far. It was one save. He had it. It was a 37-yard free kick.
In any case, Mark, last week, Rapids got two losses. Both were by a score of 2-0. Both were relatively, uninspiring, toothless performances. The Rapids have now lost 8 in a row in league play and 9 in a row in all competition. Both are club records over the course of the next two games they have, including this Wednesday against the Chicago Fire. They have a chance to tie the 2005 RSL team for the longest losing streak in MLS history. Mark Goodman,
does the RSL streak count, US Open?
That was later. It was to end the season. They had already been eliminated from US Open Cup.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that is the longest losing streak in a single calendar year for any MLS team.
I'm interested to see whether MLS will kind of like officially like put the check mark by the Rapids if they lose a 10th, because it'll be a 10th, but it won't be 10 MLS losses. But you know, that's semantics.
In any case, Mark, let's just go over this quickly. Do you have any good things from last week?
Was there anything good? Yeah, I mean, and this is going to invite the ire of some of our listeners and some of my readers, but I liked the idea that Hudson had going into Houston, right? I think it was tactically the right move to go in and play defensive. It was poorly executed, and the team doesn't seem to have the defensive chops to do it. And the other piece is if I'm going to be tough on the front office and on Hudson, is that, like, our three center backs, if we're gonna bunker hard in a 5-4, the right back in that game, I believe, was Sam Nicholson, right?
Yes, Nicholson would have been the wide midfielder.
If you're gonna bunker, Sam Nicholson's not your guy, right? You want a true right back. The Rapids no longer have a true right back on their roster at all. Marlon Harrison's a converted midfielder.
Mikael Williams and Eric Miller are gone.
Yeah. But Eric Miller would have been ideal in that situation.
Yep.
He would have been a really wonderful lockdown right back. We don't have him anymore, and we gave him away for chicken feed. And a lot of people were saying this on Twitter, and I don't think I disagree. Like, Jared Watts would have been really useful around now. Like, I think Declan Wynn has pretty much played himself out of being a first-rate starting center back, but we literally had zero other options. Axel Schoberg has a concussion or is under concussion protocol. I'm not sure I understand the distinction between the two, but whatever. Court Ford isn't back yet from injury, and he probably won't be this week either. So the three center backs you see are the three center backs we get. The alternative is Michael Azira, who's not a center back. He's never been a center back. He has midfielder kind of like tendencies. So, you know, we don't have any options, and that's no good.
Mark,
so that's my good thing was I liked the approach, but we don't have the horses to carry it out.
My good thing is Marlon Harrison's back, and that is literally all I could come up
with
for this game. Okay, we've talked a lot about the bad things, Mark. Is there anything else that we can talk about tactically from these games in a vacuum, or should we move on?
Well, the other piece that was interesting was that, like, a lot of people have been screaming for blood with Hudson to say he's setting up wrong, there's no flexibility, he's incapable of changing the plan. And he did go to you called it a 3-4-1-2? What was it?
It was a 3-4-3 to start the game and then quickly devolved into a 5-4-1, if you ask me.
You're talking about Houston or about...
The Houston game.
Yeah. So this is... We talk about this a lot, but formation is shorthand for tactics. In defense, the Rapids had a 5-4-1. In attack, what they had was basically, in my humble opinion, a 5-4-1 or a 5-2-2-1, which is a box midfield. And the box midfield is, I think, based on the personnel the Rapids had, is not a terrible idea. You've got Jack Price, who's a deep-lying midfielder regista who can ping a long ball and do some damage with that. You've got Michael Azira, who sits deep and is very defensive. And then you spray two guys out in front of him who are kind of attacking midfielders who can turn into wide midfielders, depending on whether you have overlapping fullbacks. And those two in this game were Joe Mason and Johan Blomberg, which is not a terrible idea, except that they typically receive the ball from the deep players, either the deep five or the two defensive midfielders, Price and Azira, and they received it on the wings and then ran it into, like, oblivion, right? They typically kind of were just run out of the game at that point. So we're not attacking down the middle. The only time we were attacking down the middle was we were spraying it wide and then funneling it deep with a long diagonal right into Yannick Bolli with the hope that he would bring it down. So for those who criticize Hudson and say he only has one approach to the game, I would counter and say he's modified his five-man back line and his tactical outlook in a way that is interesting and nuanced and doesn't work right now. And it's at least a new look, but they need to find ways of comboing with the midfield and with the overlapping fullbacks in ways that are bright and attacking and creative and forward-looking, and we haven't seen that yet.
I disagree. I don't know that I liked the
throwdown
for Hudson, but I don't know that he had any other options at this point. I guess the one thing that was kind of disappointing, I believe, he only made four changes from the starting 11 of the Houston game to the starting 11, or for the starting 11 from Nashville to Houston, there were only four changes between those starting 11s, one of which was swapping out Zach McMath for Tim Howard. So I kind of would have expected a little bit more roster fluctuation, because I felt like you could see just where the team was. Like, once the start of the second half happened, you know, their burgundy shirts were... Or were they in the yellows? No, they were in burgundy because Houston was in their orange kits.
Yeah.
You know, those were
have
dark.
Have we played in our yellows yet?
The road game at Sporting Kansas City.
Good knowledge.
The road game at New England Revel. It's all been on the road. They have not worn.
Right, right. I don't remember ever wearing yellows at home.
Yeah. So it's only been in road games and it's been sparingly.
Maybe we should do that just to break the funk. You know, yellows at home.
Okay.
Maybe that's our new hashtag.
Okay.
That and queso.
Okay, yellows at home and queso. Okay, Mark. So I didn't like the plan, but I also didn't like the personnel standpoint, because you figure, you know, you're playing, what, three games in 9 days, and the last one is in Houston where you're not used to humidity, just with how sweaty everybody was. This was a scheduled loss from the beginning.
You turned out to be right. I mean, I said I like the change tactically that Hudson made, and we lost both those games. So clearly I'm wrong and you're right.
Yeah, okay. Moving on, Mark, I guess, what was your big thing? Is there anything that we haven't really touched on from these games?
The big thing is a losing streak, and I think one of the things that's complicated in sports and in professional sports is to remember that these are all top-level athletes who are extremely good at what they do, and the margins in professional sports, but specifically Major League Soccer, are very narrow, right? Tommy Smith is a very good center back. The distance between Tommy Smith and Lauren Simon is infinitesimal. They are both top-flight, exceptional center backs. The difference, in my humble opinion, especially right now with the Colorado Rapids, is probably, to quote Yogi Berra, 90% of the game is half mental, right? Like, and so I don't disagree with either the coach or any of the top end staff of the Rapids that the team is lacking confidence and really struggling with the mental aspect of the game at this point. I imagine it is very hard to get into a locker room before a game and get your mindset right for the game, as opposed to walking into the game and saying, I feel bad, I lack confidence, let's not screw up, right? Which is a bad way to attack a game. So that's my big thing, is that it's really hard to get out of this death spiral that the team is in,
yeah,
mentally.
This is a bad soccer team right now, Mark, and there's no way to cut it. I don't think there's any shaking. We're past the point where there's a large of enough sample size that you are what your record indicates you are. You know, injuries and Everything else included. You quoted Yogi Berra. I'm going to quote Bill Parcells here. I can't remember whether he was talking about this in the context of quarterbacks in the American football game or in general teams, but, you know, essentially, in order for you to win a game, you have to be confident and have to believe that you are going to win.
Yeah.
In losing a game, you lose that confidence and that belief, and the only way to gain it back is to get a win. So at some point, the big thing for me is, okay, the teams, you know, there's injuries, the team's short-staffed, players are being played out of position, they're under stress and everything. Like, somebody, to the point of what you said a couple weeks ago, Mark, where you said, you know, somebody shut me up, you know, at this point, somebody do something to stop the bleeding. Say that no matter what else is happening, no matter what other chaos is going wrong environmentally or your teammates, not on my watch. I, as Tommy Smith, am not going to be the person who makes the mistake that leads to the goal. I, as Dominic Baggi, am going to do something to try and help this team to get a shot off. And really, I didn't see that from the Houston game. I didn't see anybody who was saying, not on my watch, I don't care what everybody else is doing, I'm going to try and stop the bleeding. I'm going to consciously choose and raise my level to the point where I'm not part of the problem. I'm going to be the part of the solution, even if I am plugging up one hole in a ship that has 50 holes in it and is actively taking on water. The hole that I've been assigned, no water molecule is getting through there. I'm not seeing anybody. This ship is taking on water, Mark. Yep.
It's also the last thing about mentality, to quote Paolo Mastroianni's favorite word of all time. Is it becomes an act of a player competing and saying, praying to God, I don't want to make a mistake, right? And when you play a sport, or when you do anything in life, and you walk around just on eggshells, afraid to make a mistake, it's bad. It's a bad look. It's a bad way to go about it. The flip side of that is, unfortunately, like, despite the fact that our team was theoretically going about it mentally saying, I don't want to make a mistake, Johan Blomberg made mistakes, like bad mistakes. Declan Lynn made mistakes. And that's hard. That's hard to understand. They can't get their minds right around this, despite whatever confidence. So, you know, I know that the coach keeps saying, like, we just need a one win and we'll have the confidence and we'll get going in the right direction. It's not an entirely wrong sentiment.
Okay, Mark, moving on, we're briefly going to discuss this Wednesday's match when at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Colorado Rapids will host the Chicago Fire at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Mark, the Chicago Fire have been struggling this season, but they do have a number of key players. They have Nemanja Nikolic, who won the Golden Boot last year, I believe.
Think so.
Am I remembering that correctly? He scored a bunch of goals last year. He is their number 9. They have Bastian Schweinsteiger, who everyone will remember from the German national team, Bayern Munich, Manchester United, etc. He plays a bunch of different positions. The Fire are kind of in a precarious situation right now, listeners. Nelson Rodriguez did a really good job of finally retooling the team back in January of last year, so January 2017. And they had a couple of players that kind of took MLS on surprise, and they were a little bit opportunistic, particularly in goal scoring, that allowed them to get back into the playoffs. The one tactical issue they really had is Veljko Panovic never really had an answer for how to make Bastian Schweinsteiger, Juninho, who was with the LA Galaxy for their championship run, and Dax McCarty, longtime New York Red Bulls captain. You know, those are all kind of number 6-y, number 8-y players, and he never really found a way to get all of them on the field and harmoniously in a position where all of them could work and all of them could really benefit the team. The Fire didn't really do anything in the offseason, and everybody else in the Eastern Conference pretty much reloaded or made significant changes or was already better than Chicago Fire, to where now they're struggling. And they're kind of taking it on a week-by-week basis. They had a bunch of rumors, including Fernando Torres, who they were looking at but couldn't get done before the window. They're anticipating spending money. That doesn't affect the Rapids right now, but they're a team that's in transition that's, let's just kind of, to quote the Siggy ship here, let's just kind of tread water and then see where we're at in the summer. That's led to, Mark, some creative tactical decisions. That has led to Bastian Schweinsteiger starting at center back but then playing 5 different roles as the game goes along.
Mm-hmm.
That has led to them saying, we're playing the Montreal Impact. They're not going to expect this. Let's forget forget formation and tactics and just man mark defensively. And Ignacio Piatti said, holy crap, we haven't seen this since the 1970s when West Germany was playing East Germany in the World Cup in Berlin. We don't know what to do. And the Chicago Fire got out of there with a 1-0 win. So they don't score a whole lot of goals. When they do, it's Nemanja Nikolic creating something out of nothing or Kevin Ellis hitting a banger on corners. They're also a team that's kind of a bogey team that you don't really know what you're going to get. And even though they're not very good, the element of surprise is critical. Mark, what surprises should the Colorado Rapids be looking for in the Chicago Fire?
Well, one weird surprisey non-surprise is Alan Gordon's been their starting striker for the last, I think, 3 games in a row, which, you know, I mean, against the San Jose Earthquakes, Alan Gordon earned a start over Nemanja Nikolic. Michael DeLeu is not... DeLeu.
Michael DeLeu.
Thanks. There's like two E's in DeLeu, so I feel like it should be DeLeu. But it's DeLeu. I don't speak Dutch. Is still on the shelf with injury, so they're mixing and matching up front a little bit. Luis Solignac is also familiar to Colorado Rapids fans as a guy who did not work out here, but has been semi-productive for that team. The interesting thing is this coaching staff won't be familiar with either of them, so they won't be... Everyone's familiar with Alan Gordon. Alan Gordon is going to bang it in with his head, right? And he's going to bang it in with his head after the 75th minute. He's going to make you rue the day. Although, a couple weeks ago, he just had a banger from deep, and he was just feeling it, and it was tremendous. Don't get me wrong. I won't be cheering for Chicago in this one. But another interesting one is Brandon Vincent has played as an outside back in the early part of his MLS career. He's played as a midfielder, also a defensive mid. In the last game, he played as their center back.
Isn't he hurt? No, somebody else is hurt, not Brandon Vincent.
If he is, then I'm not aware
Matt
of it.
Polster. But. Matt Polster is out for the season for, I believe, a knee injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so you've got a really interesting mix of players. You know, I'll be honest, they're an East Coast team, so I don't watch a lot of their games. So like there's a couple names on this roster that I literally have never heard of. So it should be really interesting to see what they bring. One player who's interesting, who has really started to do things is Alexander Katai.
Yes.
He played on the right wing, but he'll, overlap, he'll drop deep, and be their creative guy.
He's their cheap replacement for David Akam until the summer window comes open. He was originally brought in to be a backup to David Akam, and now he's been forced in the starting lineup, so it's kind of he goes in there and tries to do like Nicholas Lodero sorts of things, and sometimes it works when he finds Nemanja Nikolic.
Serbian Lodero, we'll call him. Yeah, he has 4 goals and 3 assists, which means he's been a fairly productive player for them, despite being, like you said, a cut-rate kind of import later on. So, and you know, Bastian Schweinsteiger is in the Regista sit back and ping perfect balls kind of thing. And he's also tough to try and get around. So, the Fire, my recollection, I'm not basing this on statistics, but my recollection of the Fire is that they don't do well in Colorado. My memory is based on going to Dick's Sporting Goods Park and seeing the Fire lose. And I think they've lost probably the last 2 games they've played at DSGP. So that's my memory. You can pull up anything else. But I think that's going to be kind of working against them. This is a winnable game for Colorado. This is a game where they should feel, despite all their troubles and travails, that they can get a result. They really need someone to be comfortable possessing the ball and comfortable passing the ball out of the midfield. And that's something we just haven't seen from Colorado. We see Enzo Martinez making kind of poor decisions or running into corners or pulling up short and playing balls. We see Johan Blomberg really struggling to find the game. Jack Price hasn't really had a good game in a very long time. His game is that long, dangerous diagonal or that cutting through ball. And he hasn't really had it in a while. So we need the midfield to step up. There hasn't really been anything for the fullbacks to do, either. And if we can really hope, that Edgar Castillo is back. I don't know what his injury is. So if you know, you can tell me, but
I don't know, Mark. And
been listed as out for 2 games in a row and I know nothing about it. And yeah. Matt and I are both at training and what we know, we know what we ask, which is we ask, you know, Ed Edgar, and he's you know, out. That's all we get. Yes. So.
I guess you mentioned Jack Price, Mark. You know, if I were to circle a name for somebody who I think, you know, needs to do something, you know, somebody stop the bleeding, somebody step up and do something to try and help this team, can you guess who I'm picking?
It's Jack.
No.
Really?
Sam Nicholson.
Sam?
When was the last time Sam Nicholson saw the Chicago Fire, Mark?
When he played for Minnesota, I would assume.
Second game of the season.
And?
And he scored a goal in a 2-1 win.
Check you out.
So Sam Nicholson is going to be a little bit more familiar with this team, might have something on them, so I'm looking at, you know, him to try and do something. Maybe that's a little bit pie in the sky, but, you know, I agree, Mark, that this is a Fire team that on the road at altitude can absolutely be had. Other than Alan Gordon and Seliniak, you know, I think Seliniak's at the point where he's been gone for long enough that he's not going to be altitude fit. I think Alan Gordon's old enough and witty enough that he'll know how to manage it, even if he's a little bit out of his element. You know, this is a team that the Rapids should be able to win. With the Fire are where they are, you know, pending several big blockbuster moves that work out in the summer window, this is a team that throughout from beginning to end of the season is going to go on the road to the Western Conference and not be very successful. Rapids are going to try and get back in this, is going to try and get back in the Western Conference, these are points that they need. A draw or a loss to the Fire is essentially them dropping points to their competition in the West.
Yeah, the other thing about the Fire that's interesting is that, you know, based on their record, they're extremely uneven. They lose games to teams they should beat.
Yes.
They beat teams they should lose to.
Yes.
So I'll give you some examples. They lost to Minnesota United to start the season in the game that you just mentioned. They then went out and beat Columbus 1-0. They lost to the woeful LA Galaxy. Then they turned around the next week and they beat New York Red Bulls on the road, right? They beat Montreal Impact and lost to Atlanta in doing some things that are actually kind of expected of them. They also beat Orlando and then lost to Philadelphia. So, like, they're a very perplexing team. They lose games they should win and they win games they should lose. That sets up nicely for us.
Yes, but, like, you know, like I said, this is a team that, you know, they're, like I said, they're just treading water. They're trying to figure things out, and it's a game-by-game thing. And they're Ponovic right now is essentially the exact foil of Hudson, which is we're going to take it game-by-game, forget the process, let's try and get a result this week. Let's throw out something that nobody's expecting. And for the most part, Hudson sticks to the same game plan, is focused on the long term, on the process, on that sort of chain, and the same sort of players and style of play. So in that, you don't necessarily know what you're getting in terms of a lineup. You're not sure what you're getting tactically from the Fire, and you're not sure how well they're going to execute it.
Yeah.
So it's a roll of the dice. You know, Mark, if you could tell me right now that the Rapids are just as likely to win this game 3-0 in convincing fashion as they are to lose this game 3-0 in convincing fashion.
Well, first they have
and
to find,
I don't know which is going to happen.
First they have to find the back of the net. When's the last time they scored a goal?
When was the last time?
Do you remember?
Do I remember the last time that the
wasn't
Rapids
wasn't in either of the games we mentioned
a
today.
Goal? Okay, so it wasn't last week. They scored against Vancouver, Castillo.
Oh yeah,
Castillo had the banger from outside.
We would
the
like to call it a banger, but it was an own goal. So we
no, it wasn't. The own goal was against Portland.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the own goal was against Portland. The Vancouver one was the one where it looked like it went off of Blomberg's shoulder and then it dribbled to him and then Castillo just fires it right past Brian Rowe.
Oh, good.
That
memory.
Was a good goal.
You're good.
Thank you. Sorry, I was excited. That
no, you're better.
That wasn't an angry at you.
You're allowed to be angry at me.
Okay, let's move on from the Chicago Fire, Mark.
Even though I give him free beer, he's allowed to be angry.
We've got two last things on the podcast. I'll let you pick which we want to do first. Our final, this is the last time Stefan Aigner will be mentioned on this podcast, as far as I'm concerned, folks.
Maybe.
Do we want to talk about Aignergate, or do we want to go to the Ask HTHL suckage pit of doom?
I like the order that you put it in. I think also, you know, finishing with Ask HTHL is always a good way to go. Keeps our listeners in suspense as to whether their question is going to get answered this week or not.
Okay, let's do that, Mark. Okay, so listeners, for the long form version of what I wrote, that will be a writing sample I submit to ESPN if they ever do a 30 for 30 on hashtag Aignergate. I wrote a long piece about Stefan Aigner's time with it. I think I called it Aignergate series finale for lastwordonsoccer.com. I also have it pinned to my Twitter profile right now, LWS Matt Pollard. on Twitter, sort of recapping everything. And I think the point where we really have to start in looking at this, Mark, is actually before Eichner ever actually happened, because there were decisions that the front office made to create the environment where they could acquire Stefan Eichner that had ripple effects throughout the rest of the season. I will take to the grave, Mark, that as soon as you made the trade with Minnesota United in March or April of 2017, sending Sam Cronin and Mark Birch to Minnesota for Mohamed Saeed, Joshua Gott, an international roster spot, there might have been some allocation money in there somewhere, that set up the team to be that took the heart out of the defense. Ultimately, that made the greatest strength for the Rapids, the one thing that they were leading on to be successful in 2017, that made that weak. And ultimately, it replaced it with two players, one of them who didn't work out. I'm not sure. We've talked about Luis Gil. I'm not sure. Oh, Joshua Gott is with Detroit City now, is he not?
Yeah.
Yes, he's with Detroit City.
Good knowledge.
And then obviously, Mohamed Saeed is back in Sweden or Norway. I can't remember which.
Lungby, I think it's pronounced.
Not even going to try it.
Actually, if you're interested, and this is something I wanted to mention a couple weeks ago and forgot, he actually became out of favor with the head coach and is having a Stefan Eichner kind of season with Lungby. And I don't think he's made the team sheet in weeks and is basically on the outs with them. So that's been also like a really sad side story that has nothing to do with anything.
So in any case, so the Rapids make the move, taking out, I would argue, two of their more important defensive players. And as soon as that happened, Nata Boateng had to be the man. What happened, Mark, in the game immediately after the Sam Cronin trade?
He broke his back
and he was out for 10 weeks. And, you know, then he wasn't able to get it back the rest of the season. He's been relatively unimpressive in 2017. The other thing that happened is the Rapids needed is for, in order for that move to work out in the long term, what they did in the summer window had to count. And at that point, you know, the Rapids didn't have an open DP spot, hashtag Juan Ramirez gate. They had a bunch of money, they had a bunch of cap space open, they had an international roster, so they were going to go and try and get somebody. And it essentially took them almost the entire window. Stefan Eichner wasn't announced, Mark, until July 26th, when you would have thought if the Rapids were doing something in June, they could have done something.
Or he didn't really arrive in September.
Yes, he arrived in August, which at that point, I think, His first week in training was the week or the week before that, or the week after that Pablo Mascherini was sacked. And then at that point, it was two or three games until the Rapids were eliminated mathematically. By the time he was actually fit and comfortable with his team, the surroundings and everything could actually play, the Rapids were, you know, it was garbage time for them, essentially. I think the first thing that we have to look at in looking at Stefan Eichner's time with the Rapids is how much the Rapids gave up to get him and how much that sacrificed from the team. Now, Mark Birch and Sam Cronin aren't what they were in 2016. Now in 2018, I think Cronin's still dealing with concussion issues.
Cronin was good in 2017.
Yes.
He had been the rock upon which most of the Rapids had built. One of the misnomers that people ask me constantly, and probably you get it too, they typically are non-Rapids fans or Rapids fans who weren't paying very good attention in 2016, is, weren't the Rapids in 2016 built on Jermaine Jones? And the answer is
no.
Jermaine Jones started 9 games in 2016. The rock upon which the Colorado Rapids' success in MLS in 2016 was built on was Sam Cronin. Sam Cronin was an extremely good defensive midfielder. Put aside the fact that he had a concussion in 2017, shortly after he was traded to Minnesota, Sam Cronin was really a very important player and an important clubhouse leader. And when they lost him, they really struggled. The other piece that goes with that that's really obvious, or maybe isn't so obvious, is, like him or hate him, a lot of people thought Mark Birch was, you know, aging and past his prime and whatever, but like, when we lost Mark Birch at left back, the alternatives at left back were
Mike DeFont
and Mikel Williams, who were both train wrecks. I mean, they were both disasters. The whole season unraveled, and most of you who are listening will remember this. So my point, and you said this very briefly in your article, but you said it differently, but you said it really well, which is, we sacrificed the 2017 season in this trade to get Tam from Minnesota United to free up salary space. we sacrificed the 2017 season with the hope that we would get a full season of a spectacular player for 2018 in Stefan Aigner, and we got 11 minutes instead. And so, and now, and here's the really important thing to point out, and I had to look this up, because the statement that the Colorado Rapids made about his departure was that by mutual agreement, the Colorado Rapids and Stefan Aigner have terminated the contract. And so that implied to me that with the termination of a contract, that meant that we would, that some of the salary money would be opened up at some sort of like mid-season prorated point, because there is a point at which players off the roster who are traded no longer count against your cap at a middle point in the MLS season. That is, as far as I understand, not the case. There is no such thing in the MLS roster terminology as termination or mutual termination by agreement or anything like that. And so I asked the Colorado Rapids specifically, did Stefan Aigner get paid a buyout or is he still on contract? And I was told the Colorado Rapids do not comment on contract information, which means, I'm assuming, that he was bought out. A player who is bought out, the full amount of their contract hits for the year. So that means when we sold Cronin and Birch and sacrificed the 2017 season to get Aigner, who barely played in 2017, and now we have this really expensive TAM player on the books, none of that targeted allocation money or salary cap space is opened up for the Colorado Rapids until October 26th, 2018. That means that the Aigner trade killed the 2017 and 2018 seasons. And that's what breaks my heart. I'm literally like, I'm getting emotional thinking about this, because Sam Cronin was awesome and losing him sucked. And now we've got this massive hole in the roster that cannot be filled financially. We don't have the money to do it. I don't know how, and it would take a lot to figure out, but I don't know how much we have, and we probably couldn't know it, to be honest, with the fact that the Rapids aren't very forthcoming. Most MLS teams aren't very forthcoming with their salary details, but like, we probably don't have much money to deal with in the window that opens in July.
Yeah.
The one thing we have is a DP slot.
Yeah, but you got a DP slot, and then however much discretionary TAM that they have before they hit the cap that, you know, Uncle Stan is willing to throw out at this point, Mark.
So that's a really good point. The discretionary TAM from Uncle Stan, right?
Like, yes.
That's a really good point. It begs the question, and this is something that most people who've been following the Rapids for a while and KSE is an open and very sharp question that they will have, which is, do the Colorado Rapids have the wherewithal or the desire or the, are they allowed by Uncle Stan to open the purse strings and spend discretionary discretionary TAM? My assumption is no. That, like, basically, because the difference in, and we, I think we've mentioned this at some point, but the difference between TAM and discretionary TAM is TAM comes from the league. Discretionary TAM comes from Uncle Stan. Like,
yeah.
It's right out of KSE's pocket. Yep. And this team is, you know, if you look at the way Forbes looks at the Rapids, is probably a perennial loser in terms of revenue. They lose probably between $1.4 and $3 million a year in revenue. It's hard to actually say that authoritatively, considering that all the financials of the Rapids are kind of concealed and contained by the fact that they're, some of that money either comes from Altitude or goes to Altitude, since they're really the same entity. You know, the Avalanche, the Pepsi Center, the Nuggets, they're all the same entity. So, like, when you sell ad time on Altitude and only a portion of it hits the Rapids, you know that's part of a package deal that goes to... Anyways, yeah. Long story short, we're probably not going to be able to buy a really awesome player at the window.
I'll be asking I'm in the process of talking with the Rapids comms department to see whether or not Porik is available. I assume at some point he'll at least want to come in and do some level of damage control, given the run that the team's on, and I've been meaning to speak with him anyways since the summer transfer window, you know, will be opening up July 1, but I'll get back to you, and I'll be asking him a number of questions relative to that, Mark.
Technically, the window's open on the 10th, but I'm
okay.
Last year was open on the 1st.
So,
right.
One thing that I will correct you, just based on all of my calculations and based on all of Marco's calculations, unless there's something we really don't understand about the roster rules and regulations, the Rapids are already in the discretionary TAM category. Yeah, they're well in. I had, based on my, again, asterisk, a lot of this is guesswork thing, like, they could be $1.2 million into the discretionary TAM. So, you know,
I want to see your spreadsheet.
Okay, so I guess the one question is now, was that all money that they were spending? Can I say something that I've been thinking for about a month now, Mark, that's going to be really unpopular?
I'll say, only if I could say something equally unpopular right after that.
You can't blame this season on Stan Kroenke, or you can't say, in the sense that, you know, the players answer to Hudson, Hudson answers to Pork, you follow that up the chain, you know, the business development. Ultimately, Stan Kroenke is the owner of the team. In that sense of, you want to say, you blame Stan Kroenke for putting Pork in a position of power, for putting Hudson in a position of power, you have the ability to change that. In that sense, you could blame Stan, but the common thing that I hear from Rapids fans is, he's completely disinterested, he doesn't spend any money, they're absolutely on a bare minimums budget contract, or budget team. And, you know, meanwhile, Atlanta's dropping $15 million on Ezekiel Barco, you know, the Galaxy, you know, every single other team, you know, even Sporting Kansas City spent, you know, a good couple million dollars on Felipe Gutierrez, Mark. But you look at total compensation for 2018, the Rapids are 10th in the league. They're mid-table. They're above mid-table on this. You know, Stan was willing to give Porik the authority to spend money in ways they hadn't last year. If you just want to say this is all Stan Kroenke's fault because he's not making us City Football Group or Uncle Arthur in Atlanta, or he's not the dozens of owners that LAFC has. Okay, you can make that argument. Okay, Stan Kroenke isn't spending $20 million on a team, but if you want to say they're spending like Houston, they're spending like Dallas, they're spending like Sporting, you're wrong. Stan Kroenke's opened up money in the ways he hasn't this season, and I don't think you can blame him for doing that. I think the blame falls on the player selection, the player acquisition, the coaching selection, and the methods there. The fault of where this team is at is further down the food chain than simply, well, if we just spent some actual money, this team would be good. Stan Kroenke's spending money, Mark.
As you like to say, hashtag retweet. You know, completely agree. That I flashed 10 fingers right a second before Matt said it. I fully agree. The Rapids are spending money. They haven't bought that third DP slot, and they never went out and bought the, like, ridiculously fantastic striker that everybody kind of dream of. And we never bought the dribbly number 10 that everybody thought would change the team from South America. That being said, like, they're 10th in the league in spending. They just spent poorly. It's not that Kroenke wasn't willing to spend. It's that the money that was spent didn't pan out. A lot of those players were on the wrong side of 30 or were not coming in fit and then got hurt, or both.
Are bad at the job that they have been assigned to.
Or one of them was a really spectacular U.S. men's national team player in 2014, but is really mostly there for PR purposes, although he is probably around average as MLS keepers, as maybe slightly below average. The thing I was going to say that was really unpopular, that will happen. It will happen, and I know that it takes a little bit of time, and the team will turn it around. But there's been total radio silence from Commerce City in the losing streak, and especially even in the last two games. And I know that they're not oblivious in those offices. They know that fans are furious, that people are on message boards saying that they're not renewing their season tickets if they had renewed them from last year already. They know that there is really anger and frustration with this team again. And it's the same anger and frustration that the team was experiencing in 2014 and 2015 when they were really, really bad back then. The Rapids Media Relations Department is going to need to figure out a strategy to get in front of everybody and to figure it all out. Right now, they're not even in damage control mode. They're still back in let's wait and see if the team can turn this around mode. And I think I think it's at least a week beyond the point where that's an excuse, like where that's a legitimate response. The media department needs to sit around, have a serious meeting with everybody and say, listen, if we don't figure out a narrative and a conversation and a way to address our fans, like a town hall meeting, New York Red Bull style, you know, why did you fire Mike Petke kind of moment, it's going to go worse for them, right? Like one of the things, you know...
This is approaching Scaramucci territory.
Yeah, Porrick Smith was really open in the offseason about, you know, coming forth with a new Rapids way. One of the things that would be valuable in a new Rapids way would include open discussion and transparency and a willingness to say, like, we are not doing well right now and we need to have relationships with our fans that means that we care about them and we understand that, like, and I'll say one last thing, which is, and this is the thing about being a fan, right? Luis Solignac doesn't play for the Rapids anymore. He moved on. Eric Miller doesn't play for the Rapids anymore. He moved on. Sam Cronin doesn't play for the Rapids anymore. He moved on, right? Players leave. Coaches leave.
Executives
leave.
Ownerships.
Everybody leaves except the fans. The fans are the ones who buy the gear and show up to the game, and they keep showing up after we lose and lose and lose and lose. There is really a point where fans will say, I don't even know where I'm showing up anymore. Nobody cares. Nobody's listening. Nobody's trying anymore. You know, there are very few teams in the world where you can lose forever. And, I mean, the Chicago Cubs and the L.A. Clippers are the only examples I can think of. And even the Clippers burned through most of their fans in their lifetime. And the Cubs, you know, you had day games at Wrigley, so that was a good reason. Anyhow, long story short, the media department's going to have to get out in front of this soon.
So that brings us to, I guess, the official start of hashtag Einergate, Mark. I won't go into too much of the detail. I've had a couple people ask me online, offline, and such about assessing blame. And, you know, we can look at the dust-up that you happened in training that I believe occurred on April 10th, if that is the Tuesday of that week that occurred. You look at the various quotes that Hudson has sort of gradually, you know, given out a little bit more to try and relieve the pressure in each of those situations. And then obviously where we were, you know, this time last week with season ticket holder town hall saying the situation will be resolved. I can't really say anything more on that. And then now, Eigner is obviously, mutually agreed to his contract. And if he isn't already, he is actively packing his bags to go back to Germany with his family. I'm still trying to assess where the blame is in here, Mark, because, I felt that Hudson's messaging was a little bit inconsistent. I feel that areas where he was giving excuses or explanations for players, not in a accusing the player situation, he gave to others that he did not give to Eigner. He didn't bring up fitness until the 11th hour. He didn't bring up team issues or tactical issues until the 11th hour. One question that I kind of have that's kind of been in my thoughts now, you know, Porrick made a couple of roster decisions in the midst of the coaching search and even before Hudson was officially announced. I believe three of those were in re-signing Baji, Axel, and Marlon Harrison in new deals. One of them was, of course, signing Stefan Eigner to his contract. And I guess I just wonder, Eigner's a natural winger. He's never been really asked or required to defend on any of the teams that he played for in Germany. Hudson, as we see now, is dogmatically committed to the 3-5-2 or some sister or brother sibling of it. And in that, you have to have wide players that are willing to contribute defensively. In that, now Eigner's pretty much blocked into one thing, either a dribbling number 10 in the three-man midfield or as an underneath striker. Hudson clearly likes the two channel runners going back and forth, and he clearly wants more. I'm convinced that he more wants two number 8s and a number 6 in the middle. So Eigner's strength is either being committed to the wing or being able to float from touchline to touchline. He's a square peg in Hudson's system around holes.
I fully agree. I'll just add to that, like, when they signed Johan Blomberg, I was like, isn't he basically the same guy as Eigner? He's not a super fast, but he's not a super fast player. He's kind of a wing midfielder, and he's good at pinging a ball over the top. Like, why did we get these two guys? And what shook out as the season began was that Eigner came, you know, either, you know, unfit or whatever, and so Blomberg took his spot. I mean, you know, you've basically got the not super fast light-haired dude from Europe, from Northern Europe, who puts a ball over the top, and yeah. Blomberg's a little younger. So it was always a weird thing that, like, the two, you didn't need both of them, but yeah. You're totally right.
So I think, you know, and I go into that in excruciating detail of everything from start to finish, the timeline of it with annotations and everything. Check out the article there. I guess just the one question I really have, Mark, that, you know, I guess I'll pose to you to start, ask HDHL, is we've got a blame pie here, and you've right. got to slice it into different pieces. How big of a slice are you giving Eigner, Hudson, Porik, Rapids Man, Stan Kroenke, whoever?
Let's absolve Rapids Man right away.
Yes.
H2O is good.
Yes.
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, most people want to throw Hudson 100% under the bus here, and I think that that's totally a legitimate perspective. I never understood why Porik signed Blomberg after signing Eigner, but I really liked what I saw of Eigner in 2017. I don't think... The one challenge that we will never know is, you know, 1860 Munich, the team from which Eigner came, was really poor. They signed Eigner and two other top German players who were former Bundesliga players to try and get 1860 Munich back up to the first division. They were down to the second division for several years. And instead of getting them up to the first division, they played horribly and got bumped down to the third division. Then, for those of you who hadn't followed it, the owner didn't have the money to pay the third division fee, which was really chicken feed. It was like $150,000. And so the team was dropped to the fourth division, which is basically regional semi-pro ball in the Bundesliga, at which point all the players...
equivalent of Harpo's in Germany.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, probably. At which point all the players jumped off the ship, including Stefan Eigner. The question there is, Eigner didn't succeed with 1860 Munich. Were there locker room problems in 1860 Munich? Were there performance problems? Were there fitness problems in 1860 Munich? Did the Rapids see a guy who had formerly played for Eintracht Frankfurt and were they dazzled by him and decided, you know, former Bundesliga player, this is our Bastian Schweinsteiger for this iteration, when the reality was he wasn't that guy anymore. Another piece is, like, was he ever a good locker room guy? We'll never know. We can't know that. I imagine we'll find out in a couple months when he does a tell-all interview with a German newspaper, and you and I have to click Google Translate 15,000 times to figure out what the hell he said. But so I don't want to absolve Stefan Eigner of this either. But, you know, I think we can probably say right now that most of it's on Hudson. That Hudson decided that this player was no good, or wasn't helpful, or wasn't useful, or wasn't fit, and excluded him. And my last piece that I wonder about is, how is that affecting the team now? You know, this is a guy who...
This was an attacking player on a team that needed to score goals, and Hudson was saying, I would rather go to battle with my guys than try and make up with you to try and help this team
win. If you want a really interesting reflection on this, Bobby Warshaw, in his book, talked about how when he was drafted by FC Dallas, he had been told... that, you know, he was going to get a crack and he was going to get a shot. And then they fired their coach and they hired Shellis Hyman. And Bobby said that Shellis hated him. And he basically talked to him in training once in a way that was not respectful, Bobby to Shellis. And Hyman put him in the doghouse forever, to the point that he had to ask to get traded off the team. These things actually happen in real life. Players are put in doghouses. And I don't think that affects the rest of the players well. That's my fear, is actually that this management style of my way or the highway is going to have negative repercussions reverberating throughout the locker room.
I'll be hopefully having some conversations with people within the club at various different levels to try and shed some light on this, Mark. But I agree with you that I don't think there's no individual who had their hands in this pot who's getting all of the pie, and I don't think there's anybody who's getting none of the pie. Whether those percentages are for me, I'm still TBD. Okay, Mark, let's rapid fire through our Ask HDHLs for this week.
We got two that are, like, identical to each other. Austin Muniz asks, is there really any hope in sight? And who's the other person who asked a similar question? Sinhosa asked, will the Rapids win another game ever? Matt, what do you think?
The Rapids will win another game ever.
Ever.
You know, forever is a really, really long time. There are lots of games in that point. Is there immediate hope in sight? I would say, based on the Twitter rants that Mark and I have both gone through, analyzing this team, seeing where they are, and the realities of how much wiggle room they do or do not have in the summer transfer window, this team at this point, guys, this team making the playoffs in 2018 is unprecedented in MLS, including the 2016 Seattle Sounders. We would have to see something on the level of MLS insanity that we have not seen before for that to be possible. I do not see that happening, so for the sake of 2018, there is no hope, folks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember what year it was, but it's not totally impossible to make the playoffs. One of the teams that we would have to pass by losing 9 MLS regular season games in the record books is the New England Revolution. And one of the years, I think like 2009 or 2010, 2011, the Revs lost 9 games in a row, but they started the season with like 6 wins in a row and they ended the season with like 15 wins or ties. So, and they made the playoffs and I think they finished 4th that year. So it's entirely possible for the Rapids to turn around, but like, you have to win, like, we have to win or tie all our games from here out. So, I think we could win on Wednesday. I think Chicago Fire is a beatable team. They don't score a lot of goals, and they're missing Dax McCarty, who really is their best player, and most reliable player. So I think it's a winnable game. Other questions? We had a good one, which is a spicy one and not a fun one to answer, but I'll take it first. Austin Mooney's also asked us, who gets canned first, Porik Smith or Anthony Hudson? So my answer to that question is they will go together. There will be, if this team doesn't turn it around at least moderately, I don't think they need to make the playoffs this season for the two of them to still keep their jobs. But I think if we lose like almost all the rest of our games, then they will go and they will go together. And I think that next season it needs to be a lot better, or they will go and they will go together, because Hudson is Smith's hire. There's no way around it.
They are tied at the hip.
And so I have always said, and I will keep saying, that this team, as it's constructed, is 50% the responsibility of Hudson and 50% the responsibility of Smith. Smith went out and bought players like Blomberg and Gashi and Castillo and on the flip side, Hudson was the guy who said, you know who would be really great? These 3 guys from the New Zealand national team that I used to coach. So there are roster construction issues that both of them have, and there are man management and tactical decisions that both of them have been making. So if they're going, they're going together.
Completely agree, Mark. If it is somebody above Porik's pay grade, that person will be moving on from both of them. If at any point Porik is feeling the heat whatsoever, I think the only way Hudson goes before Porik is if Porik's the one making that decision.
Last question, I'm going to tie two together. Rapids 4 and Legion asked, what is our position of our biggest position of need right now? So if we were going to make a transfer move, and a related semi question that I'm speedballing together from CapTide 96 is who's your starting 11 right now? And if you want to add to it, what formation would you play? But who's the Rapids best 11, and which of those players, Matt, would you drop in order to fill somebody in, to get a better player on the transfer market?
When you're on a run like this, I think every single position has to be under evaluation, from back to front, if you ask me. If there's a simple, I have an open DP spot and we need to fill an immediate hole that we don't have right now, I still think it's a dribbly number 10. I don't think that that's going to happen. In my FIFA playing, I'm always a 4-1-3 kind of guy, so let's go with that. This team needs to shake something up, in the hockey playoffs just finished, so normally when you do that, you change something in goal, even if the goalkeeper isn't at fault. I'd give Zach McMath a run out and see what he can do. My back four from left to right would be Castillo, Axel, Ford, and Marlon Hairston. Mm. I'd have Jack Price in the one spot in midfield. My two up top would probably be Gashi and Baji, with Gashi being the more central, the secondary forward, and Baji being the more traditional number nine. And then I'd probably go Blomberg, Nicholson, and Enzo Martinez. I'd need a little bit more time in terms of figuring out who's playing what roles or how they're varying.
I mean, you said it really well. The midfield doesn't really have a lot going for it that's super impressive. And one of the other things that you kind of have, like, enunciated well here is that, like, we don't really, like, we can't, based on the way the lineup now exists with the players that have been released and the players that have been added, we can't really play too many other formations. Like, Castillo...
This is a team that was built for the 3-5-2.
Yeah, and Castillo was made to play left wing back. Like, any formation, and he's basically our only reliable player from game to game. Like, he's been probably the best player through our first 12 games? We're 12 games in?
13.
11. 13 games in.
13 league games.
13 league games. So any system that doesn't take that into account is going to be weird, unless you're going to play kind of a four at the back Real Madrid kind of system where Marcelo's really an important part of the way.
Where Castillo is in the Marcelo role.
Yeah, well, yes. And so that you're looking at overlapping wingbacks who are really, really important. I think the Rapids could play 4-3-3 with Gashi as your left wing or Serna as your left wing, or put Serna as your cutting in right wing. We don't really have a right back anymore though. So I'm like really kind of spelling this out. The position we need the most of is we need a two-way number eight, the way Nana Boateng was supposed to be. We need a guy who is physical and tidy with the ball and also, will run around nonstop. Tyler Adams is a really good example of that. It's, you know, ridiculous to say, I'm going to point out that one of the best young players in the U.S. men's national team and say, we need that guy. Like,
who's going to get sold for $5 million to
right.
Red Bull Salt.
That's the most obvious thing to say in the world, but we need a guy. One of my favorite things that I heard tactically that I had never really thought of was they asked, the Men in Blazers on one of their podcasts asked Tab Ramos what Tyler Adams' best position is. And he said number 10, and they said, really? And he was like, yeah, I like having a number 10 who is physical like a defensive midfielder and can be that kind of forward harassing, tackling player, but play it at the 10. I like having a 6 that can be like a 10 and a 10 that can be like a 6. And that, I loved that answer. Whether you like or dislike Tab Ramos and the way he's played with the under 23 team, I really like that answer, but I think that what you're asking for there is a guy who is a natural 8 who you could put at the 6 or the 10 and can do those jobs. A physical, ramshackle, rambling, troublemaking guy who can also play a nice pass. And we don't have that guy at all, like not even a little bit. Like Jack Price sits deep and pings it. He can tackle a little. He's not a really good dribbler, or he hasn't been a consistent, dangerous dribbler for this team. He's just not swift of foot. So that's the improvement I would make.
Okay, any other Ask HHLs, or should we get out of here, Mark?
We should get out of here.
Follow us on Twitter individually at RapidsRabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out our Rapids musings at AroundMLS.com and LastWordOnSoccer.com. Follow us across all social media platforms at Rapids96Podcast. You can email the show at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, das bedanya, comrades.
Happy Gay Pride.